two MLU insiders.
Doesn't work for, you know, lower level teams. It's not going to work here.
Bringing you hard analysis of everything that happens on the field.
Knowing anything about these two teams, you knew it was going to happen.
This is the John and Greg Show.
This is John Phillips here after week one, and I'm sitting here with Greg Fallon, who is in the fetal position crying about New York's ability.
I picked the game wrong. I am humbled by that. But I think, you know, we said that if New York didn't come together quickly, they weren't going to be able to you know, have a fast start like I predicted they would. And it was very clear they didn't have the chemistry. But yep. That's just one part of a fantastic week one with tons of highlights and tons of great plays. And three really, really great games, and one not so competitive
one. But the non-competitive one really pulled a lot of highlights from
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Quinn Hunziker's D was unbelievable.
Unbelievable. I'm still, you know, dreaming of Jeff Graham's 80-yard put to Pierce.
The entire booth kind of was when it gets into like a shockwave when Quinn got that D. And I can kind of see it coming. I'm watching on this on my little screen on my replay machine, and it's like, he's getting closer. Is he going to do it? And then he does it, and I'm like, wow. Yeah, the athleticism on that guy is really impressive.
It's just a lot of fun, and I'm just so glad that we have games and we have numbers and we have things to talk about.
Yes, there's footage. We've both watched all the games. I've watched some of them many times because of all the work I've had to do in the last few days. So we missed a lot. We were wrong about it. Like we said, you know, we're excited to be proven wrong about stuff. And
I think that we were.
But I don't think – I think we were proven wrong on our conclusions, but I don't think we were proven wrong on our reasoning. I think there were some surprising things that happened that we said might happen. And if that happens, you know, then extrapolate from that.
Right.
Just we got the ifs wrong. we didn't get our thens wrong. We got our ifs wrong.
Yes,
I'm excited about that. I'm really happy that we were proven wrong on a lot of our points because it means, you know, people are adjusting, people are adapting, teams are doing things a little differently, and you know, this was a heck of a week, John.
It was, and so you know, the show today we'll do a run through of all the games, you know, from week one, all the action, and what you know our takeaways from you know watching those games.
We'll start with our recaps of all the games, and then we move into our special interview with one of the stars of Week 1, Mark Burton of Portland. And then can't speak for some reason. It must be I'm still in shock from that game. We will look ahead to next weekend's games, Week 2, which has some interesting dynamics
some really,
to it. Yeah,
really interesting games to look
some
at.
Some teams already are in big game situations. Some teams need to bounce back, and some teams have to deal with some travel adversity this week.
Right, and we'll talk about all those things. But you know, to kick it off with our recap, the one that hurts Greg the most.
Yeah, we'll start with the most obvious one. You know, we hyped this up as being, you know, this was the biggest game of the weekend. This was going to be the best game of the weekend. It turned out to be the only game that wasn't even close.
Right,
and it was evident from the start that New York was not really going to be competitive. I mean, they made a little bit of a run in the second half, but Boston really took it to them and showed why they're the champs and showed why they're undefeated. And you know, their defense converted on New York mistakes, and New York made a lot of mistakes. And I think the thing that we take away from this game, there's two main keys to the New York loss, and I think number one is the chemistry wasn't there.
Yeah, that was clearly obvious early on.
It's evident the talent is there. So if you're a New York Rumble fan and or me, who is the captain of the New York bandwagon.
Right.
There's not reason to be concerned yet about the long-term potential of this team. They're off to a shaky start, and that's clearly, you know, I think it's going to continue for a couple weeks. They're not there yet. You can see the talent was there. You can see a lot of players who are going to bring something special. Jack Marsh was one of those guys who had a strong debut. David Vukovic was good. But they needed to gel quickly, and they didn't. And we saw this at the Rutgers scrimmage that guys on the team were meeting for the first time. And
we did.
I think Anthony Nunez will get it together in a few weeks, and we'll see the New York team that you know we thought we were going to see. And I thought we saw flashes of it. Just it's not quite there yet.
Right.
They're not totally in sync with each other.
Yeah, I think that in in the way that Boston, they're the guys that you expect to step up in big ways, they did, and then all of, you know, the kind of the secondary characters on that team also just played phenomenal. Yeah. Whereas New York, it wasn't the same deal. You know,
yeah, this is the second key to the game before we get ahead of ourselves too much. Yeah. The second key to the game was that Chris Mazur was awful.
Yep.
Chris Mazur had a terrible game, and he's going to be the first guy to tell you he did. He and Isaac Saul, who had a better game but was also, you know, not strong.
Combined, so your numbers, yeah.
Yeah, by my tally, they combined for 3 assists and 7 bad turnovers, also 2 drops. So take that into account. 9 what we would call unforced errors. And the bad turn is not an official statistic. It's just, from my watching of the tape, there were 7 combined, really poor decision throwaways or poorly executed throws. I mean, there was one where Isaac went for a punt on his, 15 yards away from the goal and sailed it completely out of bounds. It never came in. And, Boston takes over, 5 yards from where he threw it. And that can't happen. If you're going to punt, you have to keep it in bounds.
Right. And so a big reason, for that was Rusty.
Yeah. Rusty and Goldsmith, one of the standouts on the Boston defensive line from this game, just completely took Chris Mazur out of the game, frustrated him, shut down his whole game, didn't let him get his creative throws off, didn't let him get the disc back. I mean, it was really impressive to see him dominate that matchup, and he got him.
We'll hear that a few times tonight.
Yeah. I mean, I think he would admit that. He's the type of player that would admit, he got me.
Yeah.
He dominated the matchup.
Yeah, a few bright spots before we move on to our next game, trying to keep things moving. But, obviously, Graham was classic Graham. 7 points, 3 goals, 4 assists.
Yeah, that was the other key to the game for Boston, was that their studs played studly.
Yep. And kind of ho-hum, too. Graham makes just even wild plays, and it's kind of expected.
Josh Marquette has 5 points, and they just dominated the game. They did what they do. Right. They did it very well. The other key to me was watching this game. I noticed Boston mixed in their rookies very well. Guys like Jeremy Nixon and Rowan McDonald and Piers McDonough played on lines with quote unquote veterans, because they've only got 1 year of experience, but guys who have played in this league before. And it was a line of 5 returners and 3 rookies. And then on the New York side, their starting offense was, 5 rookies and 2 returners. I think Chris Mazur and Markian Kuzmowicz may have been the 2 that that started on O for them. I think Ben Faust and Robbie Gillies also. Robbie Gillies was bad.
Yep.
He had a bad game. He was very ineffective. He had a couple of really poor throwaways on just throws that he should make. He had a couple drops. It's not a strong game. Just they need those guys to play better.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it later. How, as long as they right the ship soon, they'll be okay. They'll still be competitive.
Yep. Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. So this is the best game of the weekend: Vancouver at Portland. What a fun game!
This is one of the best games ever, and we're gonna talk to Mark Burton later in the show about it. But they looked like a completely different team, and nobody could have seen this coming. This is the most surprising event of the weekend, because Vancouver didn't play poorly.
No.
Portland just played great.
Portland played the way that we had been yelling at them to play for an entire season last year, because they had a structure to their offense. They knew what roles were in that offense. It was fun to watch. It was good to see, finally.
And they had a breakout performance from 3 rookies, actually. Yeah. Camden Allison-Hall was excellent. He doesn't have this. 1 goal, 1 assist. The stats aren't there, but if you watch the footage, it's evident that he had a huge impact.
Smooth.
He's Topher Davis player on defense was outstanding. And the guy nobody knew about, Adam Furia, number 3, if you haven't watched the footage yet, this guy had himself a game. He's just making highlight reel plays all over the place, coming up with big, big points for his team.
Yeah, the commentators, Nick Darling was in the booth, which was fun.
Yeah.
They got tired of having to say his name because they weren't sure how to pronounce it at the start.
They had never heard of him before.
But by the end, they were saying his name so much because he just was everywhere.
Yeah, and it was a complete performance from Portland. This was not, you know, they didn't pull this out at the end. This wasn't Vancouver dropped a bunch of discs and made it easy for them. This was, you know, the game started with Vancouver taking a little bit of a lead, and then Portland has to come back, and they rally, and then they take a lead, and then Vancouver rallies back. This was a complete performance. This was a full 40-minute game from Portland that was just super, super impressive. Timmy Purston, you can't say enough about the guy. 10 points, 9 goals, 1 assist. Just Mark Burton was very, very impactful in this game. I mean, his impact was very tangible in the fact that Timmy was able to score so much.
Yep.
Against a very strong defensive team.
And that's one thing that we were right about going into the season, is that either Burton or Timmy will have, you know, themselves a good game almost every week, just because of the way that last year, what would happen with Portland so often is that Timmy would break out for a few weeks, but then by the end of the season, because of the lack of structure to that offense, it was easy to shut him down.
Yeah.
But now he's getting open because of the way that they're using the field.
Which, you know, this looked like a completely different team. Last year they had a bunch of energy and didn't know what to do with it, and this year it was very directed. What they want to do is they want to hit a pass up the sideline, get a dump, get it swung all the way across the field, and they want to use that extra space on the far sideline as a huge area for a wing cutter to come in. And when they hit that, they kind of just go like a pendulum, back and forth. And if it's shut down and they go to the middle, they have a handler come up, and it's very structured. They do it together. They do it as a unit. Handlers come up, they get the dish pass, and they're looking deep right away. And now there's so much space downfield because there's 3 guys instead of 4 taking up the space. So, I mean, this is a perfect way to use Burton and Purston. Burton's presence frees up, you know, Purston to go deep. Purston's presence frees up Burton to go deep. And now you've got Camden Allison Hall in there, too. It's a great offense for them, and, you know, everyone looked like they had a role. I can go down a list and tell you the guys who I thought were detrimental to the team last year who had great games. I mean, Bree Strout. There was just enough of Bree Strout's aggressive style in this game. Jeremy Norton, who I thought had a terrible year last year, completely, you know, useless for that team, I thought. I mean, that's a strong word for it, but I don't think he played well at all. Had a very nice game. Ben McGinn had a very good game. Guys that don't really show up too much on the stat sheet had excellent games. And Eli Friedman,
yep,
was very good for them last year. I don't want to jumble him in that category of guys who didn't play well last year.
No, he played well, but...
But he 6 points, 2 goals, 4 assists. He looked like a re-energized player.
Yeah, the player incredible. That you kind of, you know, if you know any, you know, ultimate history, that...
Callahan Award winner.
Yeah, living up to his potential in a way, right? So, you know, quickly before, you know, we waste too much time talking about Portland, even though they looked fantastic. You'll hear more from Mark Burton himself. But Vancouver, again, it wasn't that they didn't play terribly.
They, and I've watched the tape of this game, I think, 3 times now. John Norris, who was one of their main handlers in offense, struggled.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his puts were not connecting. And I think a lot of that has to do with the cutters weren't playing with a lot of confidence in the deep game.
Right.
Portland completely owned this guys. They dominated in the air.
Which is something that you'd expect Vancouver, if they're, you know, if things are working, for them to be able to do.
They had a couple of nice grabs in the air, but Portland was able to really control them and had some nice Ds. And the other big thing for Vancouver is, predictably, Takuya Saito struggled in his first game. He didn't play poorly. He didn't make a lot of mistakes. He just looked like he didn't really know how he fit in yet, which is, you know, we predicted that. We knew that something like that would happen, where he wouldn't be the player he's going to be later.
And he showed flashes.
Yeah,
he did show. In terms of his throws and defensively, too.
Yeah, I think that will improve very, very quickly. But 3 guys on Vancouver who stood out and had great games.
Yeah.
Rookie Brendan Wong had 8 points. Matt Barazin had 8 points. And Morgan Hibbert was outstanding on defense. That guy's a gamer. And I think at one point he injured his hand and started throwing left-handed, which resulted in a turnover. But, you know, just the will to compete, the will to compete on that guy is incredible. And I think he did a lot to help keep them in the game.
Yeah, so, you know, moving on to another really phenomenal game. I was there doing play-by-play for it. You know, DC and Philly, and the big takeaway here is that not so much that DC's incredible, but that Philly's up there with these other teams in the East.
The key to this game, and I credit Billy Maroon, who we criticized a lot in the preseason, for realizing that the weave was not going to work.
I'm so thankful.
That's the whole key, because now they're going to be able to realize the potential of that roster, which is much improved. This is a much better team than last year, and they were not afraid to throw deep. They didn't run the weave once, I think, and they had very few backfield turnovers. And I think one of them was a drop on an easy swing, and the other one was a missed throw by Frederick Brazzi, who just threw it over the head of someone, I think. And correctable mistakes, not forcing things, and not throwing to unopen players. Although I will have my bone to pick with one particular player who I don't think had a very good game at all. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But credit Coach Billy Maroon for realizing he needed to play a different type of offense. And the results showed. They were competitive because of that.
Yeah, and I think that they weren't afraid to shoot it, but the great thing about having Jake Rainwater on your roster is anytime that deep look wasn't open, Rainwater was coming in with an in-cut wide open.
Yeah, I thought he had kind of an underwhelming performance, but a good one. I think he was good, but I think he's still not quite where he was.
Yeah, I mean, health-wise, he wasn't 100%. You know, Maroon said that going into the game, that he's still going to be featured on offense despite, you know, not being, you know, all the way there.
Yeah, he had one catch late in the game that I thought was just outstanding.
Great catch. He played well, but you know, that entire O line. Let's just, you know, give it up to, you know, almost all the cutters. I don't think there's one cutter on that O line I can criticize.
No, they played very well.
Sheridan
was strong early. You know, it kind of tailed off towards the end, but he was very strong early. Matt Esser. I mean, wow. He brings a lot to them. He brings confidence. He brings a closer. And he brings a guy who is not afraid at all to go get physical and try to make big plays. And he had a few really, really big grabs and big Ds that kept them in the game. I think some people said that he struggled in this game, but I don't think that that's the case at all. I think he played really, really well, and he was a big part of what kept them competitive.
Yeah, it's about giving effort. And you know, on the flip side, the reason why DC won this game, both in the larger picture of things and also in one play in particular, is they have probably the best effort player in this league in Alan Colick.
He
never stops. And you know, he had a slow start to this game, but third quarter, fourth quarter, man.
Five assists.
He just started going off. And then late in the game, Leon Chow, who it's been documented, you know, his struggles offensively last season, you know, Colick baits him into a throw that, knowing anything about these two teams, you knew it was going to happen.
I mean, I could tell you at the beginning of the game, watching the way that Leon was playing, that was going to happen. When he had the disc there,
with an opportunity to tie it up and go to overtime.
You knew it. You knew he was going to turn it over because he's done it before, and his offense has been shaky, and there's not really a way to dance around it. His defense is excellent. Awesome. He's a great defensive player.
He had a great kick block, which is
fun. He did. On the turnover, not strong offensively, at least in terms of his throws and his decision-making.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a number of dump passes to guys who were not open. He didn't result in many turnovers, but with a little bit of a better defensive play, you're looking at backfield turnovers that cost this team over and over and over it last year. So I think that Billy needs to redefine his role after the turn.
Yeah.
Because he's so valuable as a defender. He's so valuable as a guy who can get you the disc and who can mark up on those good handlers and those good cutters and kind of try to take some of the stronger players on the other teams out of the game. And I think if he's placed downfield in a cutter's role, I think he'll be a stronger player on defense.
Yeah, so quickly, two players that stood out on DC. You know, one could be expected, one, you know, not so much. You know, Peter Pryle, obviously.
Solid.
Very solid
game. They integrated him into the offense very well. You know, it was ho-hum. They said throughout the week that it wasn't going to be all about Peter, and it wasn't. But he still made his impact.
Yeah, not an overwhelming performance, but a very good one. He was strong. I mean, he had some really nice grabs, a nice D.
Oh, great.
His impact was felt. And he's just going to continue to get better as he gets more comfortable with these teammates.
Yeah, then the other guy, Eddie Peters, who really stood out.
Yeah, a couple of amazing grabs. A little bit of a different player from his brother. It was interesting. We got to see Eddie and Alex play against each other in their both of their first games. Alex is more of that creative thrower, while Eddie's more of a downfield athletic player. And not to say that Alex isn't athletic, but
his game is more
throwing based. Whereas Eddie seemed to be a little bit more skying based and diving based.
Yeah, ready to go. Yeah,
just playing more of a receiver or a cutter role.
And he played it well, and his teammates found him.
I think he's a rising star for DC this year.
He is, and I think that he's an important cog if they're going to challenge Boston going forward.
Yeah.
So
the takeaway for me from this game, John, is Philly's better than we thought they were. Because they made an adjustment. They made the adjustment that we said they needed to make.
Right.
They changed their offense up to something a little bit more aggressive.
Yeah, and then the jury's still out on DC.
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of them yet. This wasn't a great performance. It was okay. I think they played down a little bit.
They shouldn't have let them back in that fourth quarter.
No,
they
the could defense. Have put away. I think their defensive line played really, really well.
Yeah,
and I think Nate Castine had a nice game. But there's some work to do. Markham Schaffner didn't have a very good game. He was okay, but he's one of those guys that if they're going to go and they're going to challenge Boston and they're going to beat New York later in the season, Markham Schaffner has to play well. Markham Schaffner has to be like Alex Peters.
Yeah,
he has to make crazy throws, and he has to connect on the crazy throws, and I don't think he was very good.
Yeah, he didn't electrify the way that
did last year. The way he was an amazing player last year, both going down the field and throwing down the field.
Right, and we didn't necessarily see that.
I think that they were... DC as a whole on their deep throws was a little bit off. They didn't look crisp. They didn't look like themselves. They didn't really look like what we expected them to come out as. Also, I wasn't incredibly blown away by Kevin's new offense. I didn't see any new wrinkles or anything crazy in it. I don't think it was even as aggressive as last year's offense.
It wasn't.
I think it was actually a little bit more conservative.
I think it was, which is interesting and something to watch going forward.
Moving on to our last game of the week.
Yeah, so Seattle and San Francisco, the two teams that I still, even after watching that game, I don't necessarily know what to make.
Yeah, I think I know what to make of Seattle after this game.
That's
because
true.
I saw a system that I have some thoughts on. San Francisco a little bit tougher. I mean, the wind in this game was very, very tough.
Wind.
Yeah, which favors the Dogfish because they play in it a lot.
Yep.
But we predicted Boucher would lead the way, and he did.
Yep.
He paced them with, I believe,
he had five.
I think he had five points.
And Mac Taylor threw in three.
Yeah. Dan Bellinger, kind of a breakout performance. I'm not sure if he's related at all to Brent Bellinger from DC, but
that's
potentially they. They play a similar position, have the same number, and look a little bit alike, so maybe a safe bet that they have a connection.
Yeah.
He had 5 points as well. Mac Taylor was underwhelming, but I thought okay. I mean, he didn't have a great game.
No, he didn't stand out the way that he can.
Yeah, I think in less windy conditions, you'll see Mac Taylor be more of a factor down the field. He was kind of an in-cut, reset type of player. They were guarding him deep. They didn't want him to go out.
No, and honestly, with a new cast of characters, it's almost for the first game, especially since they came out the win, it's hard to criticize them for not trying to throw him out and let him have a crazy performance and just try and get everybody into it. But then Seattle, I think,
On the Seattle side, I have a lot of thoughts on what they were doing.
And not necessarily positive.
No. Not at all.
No.
They had a couple surprise signings. Reed Koss and Donnie Clark. Donnie Clark, I thought, had a great game.
Oh,
I think he had six goals.
He was
very
crazy.
Good. And he was all over the field defensively as well. I think he played really, really well. Reed Koss was up and down. I mean, he had a slow start to the game. He had some bad turns. But I think he had his moments.
And he's
a good pickup for them.
Oh, yeah.
I think. Sam Harkness was outstanding. I think he led the game in points with seven, five goals, two assists.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Tridiak also good. But here's the common theme with all these names I'm saying. These are all veterans. These are all guys from that core, that small core that came back from last year's team, which is only about 9 or 10 guys. And Adam Simon had a strong game too. This is not going to hold up long term. I mean, these guys were playing every point, and it was clear from the beginning that
they were going to play every point.
Mario O'Brien, Adam Simon, Matty Zemel, Sam Harkness played the majority of the game. O-N-D.
Yeah.
That's not sustainable for a long term. And it wasn't sustainable for this game because you always kind of had a feeling that Seattle was going to collapse towards the end because they're just
San Francisco
so tired.
San Francisco was using more of their guys.
San Francisco trusted their rookies, and I don't think Seattle trusted their rookies outside of it looked like Gavin McKibben and Eddie Feeley were the only two Seattle rookies that they really looked like they wanted to integrate into the offense.
But Feely's someone that's comfortable with those guys already.
Yeah, Eddie Feeley is a guy that they knew.
Ultimate areas.
Yeah, so. And I think McKibben also is.
So it's just like a very, Mario O'Brien, when he envisions this offense and this team, he sees the guys that he knows so far.
It's good that you bring up Mario because he was awful.
Right.
He was absolutely terrible in this game. I took stats on him. He had, by my estimation, 5 poor throwaways, 2 drops, and only 1 assist. And he was their primary offensive handler and defensive handler as well.
But the big reason for that was San Francisco making a brilliant decision.
Well, you saw his teammates adjust to this double team that Coach Safdie brilliantly put in. I mean, this is why Safdie's the best, because he figured out how to frustrate Mario O'Brien, how to make him make turns.
Right.
And, Adam Simon had a couple of turns on it, and some guys struggled. Reed Koss had a couple of turns on it. But you saw as the game went on that those guys sort of started to figure out how to break the double team a little bit.
Right.
But Mario O'Brien never did. He kept forcing inverted throws to where they shouldn't go.
Windy just...
It's a brilliant strategic decision by Safdie to basically force inverted is what I wrote it down on my sheet as.
Yeah.
Because he made these Seattle handlers throw junky upside down passes into the wind, which is going to lead to a lot of turnovers. And it led to, some breakout plays for them. And of course you're going to get burned on it every once in a while.
That's the nature of the league.
But percentages wise, it worked out. So it was very evident that they were struggling with the double team by the end of the game.
Yeah, so we'll talk about this a little more later as these teams will meet up again this week. But, the takeaway is San Francisco, in the wind, it's tough to say, but
yeah,
not overwhelmingly fantastic.
I wasn't incredibly impressed by them, but I was impressed by how much they trusted their younger players, their rookies.
And that'll pay off late in the season.
Yeah, that'll pay off later. And I think that, they were deeper, obviously. What was predictable was when that Seattle O-line was fresh, and I'm going to say O-line because it's, basically their kill line, for lack of a better term.
It was.
When they were fresh, they were the better team, but that's not going to hold up for the whole game. You can't play 9 guys for 40 minutes at this level. You can't ask people to do that. You're going to have to trust these younger guys at some point, and they're not getting the experience they need right now.
Yeah, we talk about adjustments. We'll see if they make it for next week.
Yeah. And just to comment a little bit on some other flaws in the Seattle game, they ran that Philly dominator weave a little bit between Matty Zemel, Adam Simon, and Mario O'Brien, and it clearly didn't work. As we've said a million times, it doesn't work. And they turned it over a lot on that. It didn't help them at all.
And the double team also, in addition to those things.
What this reeked of to me, and because I've played on teams like this before, this reeked of, like a bad college team or a mediocre college team with one player who thinks he's better than everybody else. And, a player who is better than everyone else, but thinks he has to make every play himself. And that's kind of what I saw out of Mario O'Brien. Because it looked like he was just trying to make all the plays by himself, not trusting his teammates.
Also, the Western Conference MVP from last year, not trusting him.
Yeah, well, I think he trusted Adam Simon. I think they just shut down the way to get him the disc. And I think Mario just, he's got to make a change in the way that he runs the team if he wants them to be successful, because that's not going to work. It doesn't work for lower level teams. It's not going to work here. You can't put the team on your back like that and, just make poor decisions and poor throws. just because, you know, you throw your hands up and say, there's no better option than me trying to make this throw. And that's what it looked like a lot. It had all the signs of a team like that, and it's not sustainable. It's not good.
Yeah, so we'll talk about, you know, that matchup in week two a little more later. But, you know, now check out what
I'm very excited for this.
Yeah, what will be a fantastic interview with, you know, breakout star from week one, Mark, you know, in Mark Burton.
Yeah, and so here's our Mark Burton interview coming up.
So we have Mark Burton of the Portland Stags here with us, you know, from Portland, you know, speaking with us about last week's upset win over the Nighthawks.
Easily the best game of the weekend. Maybe the best game we've ever seen. Just
thank you so much. It was a joy to be part of, and it's great to talk to you guys about it. And I'm looking forward to venturing for more, and you guys are in for a treat this season, so get ready.
We can't wait to see more. It's just unfortunate we have to wait a couple weeks for you guys to take the field again. Mark, this was a completely different Stags team than we saw last year. You got to play against them, I believe, three times with the Rainmakers last year. And I probably got some idea of the culture. Now that you're a part of the team, what has changed in the culture of the Stags that has made them such a more impressive team than they were last year?
Awesome. I just want to flat out first say that it's a privilege to be part of playing with Portland. I enjoyed a lot Seattle playing last year. For me, like I said before, I wanted a fresh new start, a brand new atmosphere, just something I like playing, kind of with the energy that I saw Portland have last year when I first originally tried out for them. And I wanted to be a part of that this year. And honestly, last year, I think, with Portland is, they're trying stuff out. They were bringing together some really young, great talent to put together. And they all kind of needed to fit it together. And so I kind of saw that. You know, I desperately wanted to be part of it because it's something where I like that young, vibrant feel, and we're going to grind and fight and you know, be part of hopefully a piece of puzzle that can help bring championship to Portland. And so, I think compared to last year, you know, Portland always had that. They always had that young, athletic, fun feel to it, and they love one another, and I absolutely admired that. And so I wanted to jump on board and have a part of that, and that's kind of where the heart and soul, I think, of Portland is. And then when you bring in I think two amazing coaches like Mike Knapp, who's been there, and Danny, who's Coach Schwa and is a great player as well, they really developed a system that can help our strengths and our young, vibrant energy plus veteran side of us. And so it's been a joy to be part of, and they truly have embraced me as, you know, almost like a Portland player. So or, you know, being from Portland, so they've always been kind of my enemies. So it's great to be part of it.
You talked a little bit about the new coaches and a new system, and that's one of the things that we really noticed watching the footage of this game. Was last year Portland was a team with a lot of talent and a lot of highlight plays. You know, they were really fun to watch, and it seemed like a lot of energy directed in a random way. They didn't really know how to use the energy, how to use their skills, and this game very clearly had a purpose, very clearly had a strategy and a structure. And what can you tell us about that?
There is basic 101, and they really, Mike and Danny really, and as well as the organization, Nathan and Will and them, they wanted to create, you know, keep that young feel, but they added something that, you know, I know it's great. It's smart frisbee. It's playing smart. It's when I first wanted to be part of it, I had a good conversation with Mike, and I said, listen, I'd love to help out in any way. And my biggest thing is I want to create space for maybe if I'm not just getting it, maybe somebody, I'm creating space for somebody else, and I'm drawing a double team quickly or whatever, and working together and piecing together that. And it's playing smart frisbee. It's bouncing off the sideline. Taking shots. Yeah, we like to take shots, as you kind of saw the first week, but they were smart shots, or some of them got away, but they were just very smart. And so when these handlers, like we do on the O&D lines, they're playing into this and they're buying into this, which is, I think, the biggest thing. And we saw results from it, and it all pieced together. And throughout practice, we were adjusting to it. And, you know, at first, you know, Mike and Danny had us, like, kind of playing, just scrimmaging, and we would take our last shots deep because we love that. And we have young athletic guys who can make plays. But then all of a sudden, more and more, buying into, is that the 100% throw? Is that how we position ourselves to keep marching up the field and use that whole length of the field and width of the field? And I think you kind of saw the first glimpse of it, and we're ready to add more to it. So.
Yeah, we can't wait to see what you guys come up with. You talked about creating space for teammates, and one of the teammates that you created a ton of space for in week one was Timmy Purston, who we're very familiar with, and he went off again, 10 points, 9 goals, 1 assist for him. What can you tell us about playing with him? Because he just looks like a guy who's just so much fun to be on the field with.
Timmy, he really is he's the most interesting man in the world. He should definitely be on some ad, or like the Dos Equis ad, or whatever kind of ad. He's fun. He's a joy. Always kind of smile on his face. And just the talented player that has a knack of just scoring. I think it's flat out just scoring. And how can, you know, we use that to our advantage? And so for us, it was, I saw that going into it. And I thought, you know, I'd love to play alongside somebody who, you know, we can be kind of brothers and help each other out with that. And so he helps me, and I help him, and Camden and other guys on the O-line. I mean, it's just a great thing to be part of with a guy like Timmy. And, you know, you just never know what he's going to say. And that's a joy. That's a, you never know what he's going to bring to the stadium either. There's some interesting things he's brought. But other than that, it's great. It's Timmy. I mean, the word Timmy comes out, and you just smile. And it's a joy to be joy to play with him. So.
How happy was he about that victory?
He's enjoying it. He's smiling. He was having a good time, as usual, throwing discs into the fan, handing out discs to fans and stuff like that. And he's just really buying into it. He's a definite joy to have, and he's a character, flat out, and it's fun.
So, one of the breakout players from that Portland victory was Adam Furia, who, up until, Greg said, they were driving back from Boston van.
We were streaming the game in the van on the way back from Boston, and all of us kind of at once went, who is this guy? Who's number 3 on Portland? And we had to look it up, and the guy I'd never heard of, but now I think everybody who watched the game knows who he is and knows he's somebody to watch out for on that Portland D-line.
Yeah, so what was it like to see his breakout performance?
He played incredible. He had a couple nice snags, a couple nice Ds. And the thing is, too, is I remember, I'm pretty sure, I don't know the history with Adam, but, I heard he's an old, lineup player, and, I kind of heard of him, and so, when we were practicing, when he kind of took me on as a matchup, I was like, I think I can get open on this guy. And he has a great, even when you try to adjust on a cut, his next step is just side by side, and that it's really hard to get open on him. He really makes you do one thing or the other, and he has the knack of expecting what the offensive cutter wants. The cut that, you're trying to set up a cut, and he knows exactly what kind of cut you're trying to set up. And so I expected good things, but at the same time, I didn't really know a whole lot about him, and he's amazing. He's somebody who I admire on the D-line, and he's quick. So
after, this offseason, a lot of, pundits and a lot of fans seem to, be jumping on the Vancouver bandwagon, but you guys kind of derailed that in week one and kind of showed that you're actually the more put together team right now. So what was the key to that victory to start off the season?
I think the mentality I think that we're bringing is why not us mentality. And things were going our way during the game, we're like, that's not Scott now. Ram up that energy, that feel, and we were hungry at halftime. We were hungry for more, and we wanted more, and we didn't want to stop. And so, we know Vancouver's a great team. Again, they are part of the most put together team on the West Coast, with guys coming back and key additions to the team, and a leader like Morgan and Langston Kirschman. I mean, I definitely understand why they're a favorite. But I think we both know that kind of. The why not us, the mentality and bringing that energy and that feel is so exciting. And so we were living it up, and everybody was making plays. It wasn't Tim definitely went off. Other guys had great games. But everyone was doing their role and playing their position, and we know that we can get better with the scary thing. We know that we made a couple, mistakes out there, and we're wanting to get better and continue to grind with other teams out there. And we're looking forward to more battles and, show it up. So.
Yeah, you mentioned Morgan Hibbert in your description of Vancouver, and he and you have a little bit of history in terms of he's gotten some big D's on you last year, and he got one on you this week, but you also, got a few on him. So can you talk about the rivalry with Morgan, if there is one, and, can you speak to how he is as a defender and what it's like to play against him?
Yeah, Morgan's one of the best defenders in the game, hands down. I remember that last year, he guided me for some of the season until started picking up the game more and more and using that field to my advantage. But, I know that run down feeling when that disc goes up and I have four or five steps on him, but I know he's I just see him as, Gigantor coming my way, and I know he's gonna come over the top of me and absolutely deem me like no other. And so it's definitely a joy to have that kind of rivalry between him and he makes me work hard, and I hopefully I'm doing the same, and I think I am for him, and that's what makes playing MLU so special and playing Frisbee in general so special, being Northwest, and I played against him in club over the past years, and playing now 2 years with MLU, and hopefully the more for the future. But when the first one went up, I was like, I know he's coming down for me. He did this last year to me all the time, and I just jumped earlier, and the second time I took a look back quickly to see where he's at, and I just see him hauling, and he really was like Megatron coming my way. And so I just jumped up earlier and came on down, and kind of helped me up, and he goes, and we just kind of had a little talk and a little respect, and it's a joy. I love that stuff. When you look around any sports, when you see that rivalry between two players who definitely respect each other, but at the same time, is I like a little trash talk, and I'm ready to back it up, and Morgan is too. So it was awesome. It's a joy to be a part of that.
Fantastic. Mark, good luck going into week two.
Well, week three.
Oh, week three, right. You guys luckily, it's nice. You get a bye week early, really have all your games late in the season kind of, push back. So enjoy your bye week. You're right, Greg.
Any special plans for the bye week?
We're watch some game tape, and quite frankly, we're going to have practice. We're going to have two practices again, and we're just going to keep getting better. And, that's pretty much the plan. So I have to drive down to Portland from Seattle, but I'm getting used to it. Listen to some podcasts. I've been listening to your guys' podcast and listen to, others. So, we're looking forward to it. Get ready. You guys are in for a treat, and I hope MLU knows that as well.
All right, Mark, thanks for coming on the show. Good luck in week three, and we look forward to seeing more from the Stags as the season goes along.
I definitely appreciate it, guys, and you guys are doing awesome, and keep it going. So, thank you.
Thanks so much, Mark.
So we're going to look ahead now to week two, John.
Whew.
After that interview with Mark.
Which was super fun. We hope to have him on at some point again. He's... I'm... Fantastic.
I'm just disappointed we don't get to see them play this week, because that's the they're the new most intriguing team in the MLU. It seems I may have been drinking the wrong colored green Kool-Aid. But I still do believe in New York. I think that they'll get that turned around.
Yeah, so speaking of New York.
Yeah, let's dive right into their game this week.
They'll host Philadelphia.
Yes.
In the first of a back-to-back in week two to week three.
Yeah, back-to-back's not the right way to, I think, there's turn some... It is a home-and-home-ish.
It's a home-and-home-ish. It's a home-and-home-ish.
But the back-to-back for us is really that road trip That's where you true. Play two games in the same weekend, and it's really only a factor in the West Coast.
Right, you're right. So it's as close to a home-and-home as you're going to get when you have a week off in between games.
Yes.
But it's the first of two games for New York that, they had to take at least one of them.
I think that's accurate. I don't think that there's room to be concerned or reason to be concerned with New York if they come out of the gate 1-2. We said they might struggle. And, that's the thing that we were wrong. We were not wrong about the talent on this team. This team is loaded. They're super stacked.
Yeah, they just need
What we were wrong about was how quickly they would come together, which we said was a possibility. And it's somewhat disappointing that they haven't come together as quickly as we would hope, because we don't get to see the full product
right
away. And I think that was a game that they could have won with a little bit of a stronger performance. And they struggled early, and that kind of got them out of the game.
I think now
they look ahead to a Philly team that's on the rise.
Right. I think with New York, the thing just to keep in mind is that playing against Boston and playing against Philly,
very different.
They're two different challenges, and I think for New York to have Philly two straight weeks can only help them.
They have to get one.
They have to get one,
or else they're digging themselves a too big of a hole.
I think more than they just have to get one, they have to find a structure to that offense. They need to figure it out.
Absolutely.
And in the same way that DC, they didn't really look
didn't look complete.
Yeah, New York needs to feel complete by the end of this 2 week stretch against Philly. They need to figure out something on O that's
this
working.
This is a big 2 weeks. I don't think they have to win this game. I don't think they actually do win this game.
Yeah,
I'm shocked that I'm picking Philadelphia to win a game at this early in the season. But they got to get one, because if you don't get one of these, then you're looking at you're sitting 0-3.
Boston three more times.
They did it last year. They started 0-3 and got themselves back in the playoff picture, but you're through two of your soft games.
And you also give Philly two wins.
Yeah.
So
you're spotting Philly two wins. DC by that point, I don't know the schedule on hand, but I think they'll have at least one. We know already they've won last weekend. They have two games against Boston, so they could be 1-2.
They could
very easily could be 1-2. So you're not completely out of it yet. But you make things difficult for yourself with, three games coming up against Boston, three against DC, and only one left against Philly. You have to get one of these games. You have to, get your first win now.
And for Philly, I think that we need to one thing I'm going to stop doing after seeing them is, until they start getting beaten down the way that they were at the end of last year.
They're not a pushover team.
They're not a pushover team. And I think that this Eastern Conference is a little tighter than we think. Especially when it comes to New York and Philly right now. And I think if Philly's catching New York at the right time to pick up one, if not two wins.
Yeah, and they have reinforcements coming. So all of a sudden, with the one tweak, you're looking at a team that might have a shot at the playoffs. Just maybe. And if they can win, if they take these two games from New York, you're looking at, maybe the new favorite to challenge for the second seed.
Yeah, and
with the reinforcements coming, with the way that they played last week, there's a chance for them to be, competitive all the way through the season and dangerous.
But that all hinges on this idea that Philly stays away from the weave.
Yeah, they have to do it. They have to stick with a pro style offense. They can't play this dominator weave at all. It doesn't work. We saw Seattle struggle with it. We've seen Philly struggle with it a lot. You have players down the field, use them. And they did, and that's why they were competitive this week. And I think that they're going to continue to do that this week, and I expect them to win the game as long as they don't use the weave. And they need to maintain their composure, which I think they did to an extent in this first game. And they just need to not make the crucial error. And it's the same thing a little bit with Vancouver. They need to not make that crucial error that takes them, you know, that ends a close game.
So we both have Philly winning.
Yeah, I have a close game. Spinners win 2017.
I have it a little tighter. I have 21-19, but
yeah, I think it's going to be close.
It's just New York not being there yet.
Yeah, I think New York is very, very clearly the better team, but I just don't think they've gelled yet, as we saw last week. I mean, there's not really any way to dance around it. They're not complete yet.
Right.
They've got some talent, and it was guys that we didn't really talk about, like Michael Hennessy, who had an amazing game, who were the bright spots in week one. And you know, add that on top of guys we expected to contribute, you know, Vukovic, Marsh, Murray, who wasn't very strong in week one. They're a dangerous team down the stretch, but right now they need to come together really quickly, and I think they're a week off. I think maybe week three is when we see the New York team that, you know, we thought we'd see, because very clearly they didn't do enough to gel in the preseason.
Right. Yeah, and so they need to gel, and they need to gel fast. So another team that will look to continue to gel if they're going to handle even this weekend, you know, is San Francisco, who will go up to Seattle in the first of the true back-to-back.
Oh, we didn't do our headline.
Oh, you're right.
We didn't pick a headline. Do headlines for Philly, New York. Why don't you start?
You start.
Okay.
As I come up with one.
You got to prepare better for this, John.
Okay.
My headline is going to be improve New York, looks better, but fails to quell rising spinners at home. So I think they play better. I think New York plays better, and I think particularly Chris Mazur plays better, and he's the key for them in this game. He has to have a good game, and you know, Philly doesn't have a Rusty Ingoldsmith, so nobody's going to be able to take Mazur completely out of the game. So I think he has an improved performance. I think the team has an improved performance, but I think they're still a week off.
Spinners rumble, tumble, come out victorious.
It's a weird headline.
It's a weird headline, but the point is they're going to go up to New York, which, you know, you say what you want about New York Stadium. It can get loud. The rumble is a good name because it gives fans the reason to stomp on metal seats and make a lot of noise. And, you know, it can be, you know, a pretty hectic environment there.
You can get some wind up on top of that stadium where, you know, it's on the roof, on a rooftop of a building.
So it'll be a battle for them, but I think that ultimately they're the better team. And, you know, my deep shot later on kind of hints at that, you know, one individual matchup.
They're the better team, but I do agree that they will win.
I think right now.
At this point, they're the more complete team. They're the more complete team. All right, moving on.
Yep.
To San Francisco, Seattle. I think in this game, San Francisco continues to gel as a team. And they very clearly have Seattle's number. I mean, this was a marquee game last year, and they beat them 2 out of 3. Well, actually 3 out of 4 with the playoff game. I think the keys for San Francisco are, you know, frustrate Mario, take him out of his game again, just like they did this week. I don't think that the double team strategy will be necessarily as effective because I'm not expecting the crazy wind that we saw in San Francisco. Probably some rain from, you know, knowing what it's like in Seattle. Which maybe favors Seattle a little bit, but this is a good San Francisco team that's just gonna, you know, they need to continue to get better. They need to continue to develop these new players and try to get them going offensively and defensively.
Yeah, I think that with San Francisco, and the reason that I think that they have the edge in this game is that they're at least trying to use their new players. Which we haven't seen from Seattle yet.
Seattle needs to trust the rookies. And I think the key for them to win this game is that the offense has to run through Adam Simon as opposed to Mario O'Brien. Because Adam Simon is the MVP. He's a stud. And his numbers didn't look very good last week. I think 2 assists.
Yeah.
But he had a strong game. He's very obviously their best thrower. And I think that needs to be embraced. And I think the offense needs to key – on going through Adam Simon.
O'Brien is confident to the point of cockiness, whereas Simon just does his job, and he does it incredibly well.
Yeah, he's one of the best players in the league.
None of his throws are, you know, they're not forced. He doesn't try to press the issue. He just makes the right decision almost all the time.
Yeah.
Which you see from the elite handlers in the league. So
now we move on to San Francisco's second game of the weekend. The second leg of their back-to-back.
Are we going to pick? So let's, are we going to go through San Francisco's weekend and then pick both games?
Let's pick, we need one headline for both games, I think.
All right. I'll give you a good headline for San Francisco, Seattle.
Okay.
Which is Fool in the Rain. Guess who that fool is? Mario O'Brien.
I think the headline from that game would be that San Francisco continues to, you know, show dominance. You know, or Dogfish continue to dominate Rainmakers at home.
There we go again. The alliteration with the D's. I like it.
Yeah, lots of D's.
Good headlines.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so...
So I guess now we're doing headlines for each game. I was planning on doing just one for the weekend, but okay.
Well, I didn't know that. It's okay. I'm going with it. I liked Fool in the Rain.
We'll change it up now. We'll change it up. All right. So okay. Second leg of a back-to-back.
So San Francisco, Vancouver. Vancouver own one, but their home and anyone that you talk to in this league about Vancouver...
It's the toughest place to play.
They put on a great show. It's loud. It's a great environment for fans, but for opposing teams, it's difficult.
Yeah, I think this is Hawks all the way. Because second leg of a back-to-back, and not only is it the second leg of a back-to-back, you're also going into the most difficult stadium to play against a home. Yeah, they're raucous in Vancouver. They love this team. And you're also, you know, you got to do the border crossing on the second leg of the back-to-back. And I also think Vancouver is the better team right now. I was more impressed with the way that they played in a loss than I was with the way that San Francisco played in a win. I think Safdie will probably have something up his sleeve, but I don't think this is the time for San Francisco to get Vancouver. I think the cards are stacked against them, and they're going to struggle this week. And I have Vancouver winning handily.
Yeah, so we talk about how Hibbert played a really strong game last week against a Portland offense that was very tough for Vancouver overall to handle. Here, his job will be a little easier. You know, he'll basically be on, I figure he'd take Mac. And, you know, just that challenge, try and shut Mac down. Pretty much the numbers that he got in that game against Seattle. You know, so what, 3 points?
Yeah, if there's less wind, he'll be much more of a factor.
And but I think that having Morgan on him...
Yeah.
Can shut him down. I think that's one reason why I'm thinking Hawks here too.
Yeah, Hibbert's got to have a big game, and I think he will. I think Mac Taylor plays better, and I think you see a Dogfish team that's similar to New York, just not there yet. Although they looked a little bit, they looked like they had more structure and a little bit more of a complete team. But I think this road trip is just too hard.
It's one of those things, you know. This is an odd connection, but. You know, that Duke-Syracuse game in college basketball that was just a wild, you know, high-scoring affair. You know, it showed two teams that to have a game that good, you need two teams that can play the game. You know, one of the great things, like there were no whistles being blown. There were no balls going out of bounds. Just constant action. Portland and Vancouver right now, out of the four teams in the West, they're the two teams most able to have that crazy game, to play that well, that it's that fun to watch. I did not enjoy myself watching Seattle and San Francisco as much as I did watching Portland-Vancouver.
It was a well-played game on both sides, and I think the weather conditions, you know, allowed for that.
Right, whereas, you know, with Seattle and San Francisco, it was just frustrating to see what Seattle just couldn't do, and the fact that San Francisco couldn't run away.
It was much more of a chess match, which I somewhat enjoyed, but... You're right. The most entertaining game of the weekend was between the two teams. It looked like they're firing on all cylinders right now.
Right.
Or at least close to it. I think Vancouver's got a little work to do. Portland is clearly, you know, just really, really confident and playing really well. At least if you take anything from that first game.
Right. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be as big of a blowout as you seem to think. You from your score, I think that you can see this one being over by the third quarter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just don't think this is the Dogfish week. And the headline for me for this is, you know, Hawks dominating home opener, beating tired Dogfish. They're not gonna hold up well over this road trip. I think they'll get the first one, and the energy of going up to Seattle and beating a Seattle team that has really good players at the top, and then, well, we assume weaker players at the bottom because they're not playing
at all.
It'll be that's gonna take a bit out of them, because they're gonna have to it's not a pushover game.
No,
it's a team that's somewhat dangerous in Seattle, but they could all. I don't know what to make of them. I mean, I think I know what they are now if they keep doing what they're doing. But if Seattle, realizes what they're doing is not effective and changes it, they could be a completely different team.
Yeah. So, I think we're on the same page that Vancouver looks like they're more.
Yeah, I like the Hawks in this game, and now we're gonna move on to our live stream East Coast game. The live stream West Coast game will be the Saturday game, San Francisco and Seattle. So you get to see that on MLU Live on the YouTube page. And this is the East Coast game. We're getting Boston again. Boston at DC. DC's home opener. We expect a big crowd. We expect DC to play fired up. But I'm not going to make the same mistake that I did. Picking against Boston is very risky. And I'm reluctant to show faith in this DC team after the way that they played. I was very, very quick to show faith in a New York team that clearly wasn't ready to play at the level I expected them to play at. Just because I saw a lot of good things in their practice. I saw a lot of strong players. Now we have game footage on DC, and I don't see them being able to beat Boston this early in the season.
No.
Although, last year, this was the tightest game Boston
had. This was.
And I expect,
it was this exact situation, right? They were down in D.C.
Yep. I expect a tight game. I mean, it's a long bus ride. I don't expect Boston to lose. I think they're going to win in a close game. Just because they have that target on their back and they love it. They love playing with everybody coming after them. And D.C. really, really wants to win this game. We talked a lot to them in the offseason about how they want to be the team that's going to beat Boston.
Right.
Here's your chance. The keys for them to win this game, I think Schaffner needs to play better. The Hucks need to connect. And the D-line has to continue to play well.
Which they did. They were the strongest point.
The offense needs to clean it up.
Yeah. I can't pick DC. I just can't do it.
I would love to see them win. I think it's better for the league if, the competitive nature will improve and the interest will grow at once Boston loses their first game. I would like to see it happen. I'm not going to be shy about it. I mean, I really like watching a lot of those Boston players play, but nobody likes the best team. Nobody likes the Yankees,
right? So, but at the same time, until I see it happen, Boston.
I'm not stupid. I picked against them once. Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Right.
So I'm not going to go out on the limb and, pick DC to beat Boston in this game. Although I think they have a chance. It's early enough in the season where you could see something crazy happening.
I just don't.
But I don't see it in this game.
I have 22-18 Boston.
I think I have
22 is our magic number, by the way. They averaged 21.9. Yeah, I saw that from Sludge. That was a good bit.
I got 21-19. I think it's a tight. I think it's a little bit similar to last year. I think DC can make it closer,
but they press a little bit at the end.
This is such a hard game to read because you're torn between what you want to see and what you think is going to happen.
Yeah,
and you're also a little bit shell shocked because you got let down by a team who you thought was better than they showed.
Until I see Boston lose, I'm going to keep picking them. I'll get one wrong this... I'll get one wrong.
And then you'll know... Then the blueprint will be out there. How do you beat Boston?
Right.
That's the thing I'm most excited about for the Boston loss when it happens.
Right.
Breaking down the tape and looking at how they lost. What's the blueprint for beating them?
Right. All right. So let's move to our deep shots.
We've come to the end of our show.
We have.
Let's review how we did last week on our deep shots. I think we were both a little bit off.
We were off.
Peter probably played well. He didn't set the points record.
6 points.
Timmy almost did.
Timmy did. Timmy came close.
Very close. And so there were some rookies that played well, but Timmy was the dominant player this week. He had the most points. Was it Michael Hennessy came close? Was seven.
Hennessy's.
Yeah, Hennessy, very strong player for New York. But we didn't connect on our deep shots last week, much like DC didn't connect on many of their deep shots this week. So my deep shot this week is that Vancouver wins by double digits. I'm not predicting they're going to win by double digits, but that's my bold prediction. But let me rephrase that. That's my bold speculation. I think that they could beat San Francisco by 10. So
that would be an interesting kind of moment for San Francisco after beating Portland by some ungodly number last year to be such a different team that they can lose by 10.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, deep shot this week, not a prediction, more of a speculation. Because I don't think that'll happen, but
there's
it
a potential.
Could. I think it could.
Right.
I think it's something to watch out for.
Minus that Matt Esser will outscore Chris Mazur.
I think that one's probably a little bit more likely than mine.
So I think that Philly's going to win. Their D-line's going to have to play well. And if their D-line's playing well, that means Esser's playing well.
Well, Esser played on the O last
week. He was on both.
Was he doing some Harkness duty?
He was.
Well,
Billy played around with him on both. So I think that, but especially on D, that's where he really shined, making a lot of big plays in the middle of the field. And so I think that it could happen. And I think that
could that maybe be the matchup? Is that maybe who they put on him? I wouldn't expect it. I would probably expect Leon Chow to be on.
I still think that it would be Leon.
Yeah.
On Mazur. But we'll see. They have so many, again, New York, the talent hasn't come together yet, but they have so many guys that, it's really a tough decision to make, matchup-wise.
Yeah, I'm not going to agree with you, but I think there's potential for it because Matt Esser is a very strong player. He had a very strong week one debut.
Momentum.
But I don't think there's any chance that Chris Mazur struggles like that again. I think he's too good to allow himself to play like that again. And I also don't think there's anybody on Philly who can shut him down like Rusty did.
And we saw that last year.
Oh, yeah.
That he kind of tore Philly apart.
Yeah.
So, it'll be interesting. I think it's a deep shot.
It is a deep shot.
So, this is it.
This is it. This is it for the show this week. Our first show with tape to watch and discuss.
Which felt so good to actually have things and comments.
And now I'm excited for the next round of tape to come in.
Yeah, can't wait till Saturday.
All right.
So
that's it for us.
Yeah, that's it for us today. As always, send us comments, questions, any predictions about this week, what you think of our deep shots, what your deep shots are. You can shoot us an email or, find us on Twitter or Facebook.
Yep.
For Greg Fallon.
We always screw this up.
For Greg Fallon.
You're supposed to say that.
I'm John Phillips. Thank you very much for this wonderful show.
Thanks for listening.